Thanks very much for joining us for the digital capsule of GU ASCO 2022 Bayer Ambassador Program meeting. I'm Dr. Steve Yip. I'm a medical oncologist at the Tom Baker Cancer Center and the Southern GU lead here at our location and the medical lead of POET. I'm pleased to be here with Dr. Lucia Nappi, as we both attended the 2022 GU ASCO, and that took place between February 17th to the 19th of 2022. Dr. Lucia Nappi is a colleague of mine. We both trained in Vancouver. She's a medical oncologist in Vancouver, BC, who has a specialty in GU malignancies. And she'll be discussing the phase 3 magnitude study, and I'll let her introduce it. Thanks very much, Dr. Nappi. Please tell us a little bit about the magnitude trial.
Thank you very much, Dr. Hip, for the introduction, and thanks to Bayer for the opportunity to discuss this important abstract. So I'm going to discuss the phase 3 magnitude study. This is the first results of niraparib with abiraterone, acetate, and prednisone as first-line therapy in patients with metastatic castration-resistant prostate cancer with and without homologous recombination repair gene alteration. And the results were presented at ASCO GU by Dr. Kim Chi. The background for the magnitude phase 3 clinical trial consists in the higher percentage of patients with metastatic CRPC who present alteration in the genes that, in the genes that are associated with the homologous recombination system. As we know, these genes have been associated with poor prognosis and resistance to androgen receptor pathway inhibitor, but they are predictive for response to PARP inhibition. The androgen receptor signaling regulates DNA repair in prostate cancer, further providing rationale for combining PARP inhibition and androgen receptor targeted agents. Niraparib is a potent inhibitor of both PARP1 and PARP2, and has activity in heavily pretreated patients with homologous recombination deficiency metastatic CRPC prostate cancer. The phase 3 magnitude study was initiated to assess the combination of niraparib, which is a PARP inhibitor, and the abiraterone and prednisone, which is an androgen receptor pathway inhibitor, in patients with metastatic CRPC. In patients with and without alteration in the homologous recombination system. This is the study design of magnitude. So patients with metastatic CRPC were eligible with ECO performance status 0, 1, and BPI SF was pain score 3 or lower. Patients could have received prior taxane-based chemotherapy for metastatic castration-sensitive prostate cancer, and prior androgen receptor target agents for either no metastatic CRPC or for metastatic castration-sensitive prostate cancer. Prior abiraterone and prednisone for first-line therapy in the metastatic castration-resistant setting was also allowed, but for less than 4 months. The patients were divided in two cohorts, a cohort that was defined as biomarkers positive if there were there was one of these gene alterations listed here, mainly ATM, BRCA1, BRCA2, BIP1, CDK12, CHEK2, FANCA, DAC2, and PALB2. And biomarkers negative if they were not found to have any of these alterations. In the biomarkers positive cohort, one of the stratification criteria was BRCA1, BRCA2 versus other homologous recombination gene alteration. The two cohorts of patients were randomized 1-to-1 to receive either niraparib plus abiraterone acetate plus prednisone or abiraterone plus prednisone versus placebo. The primary endpoint of magnitude was radiographic progression-free survival assessed by central review, and there were several secondary endpoints that were established hierarchically. The data cutoff for this analysis presented at ASCO GU was October 8, 2021. And patients were prospectively tested for plasma, tissue, saliva, and whole blood. If the plasma was negative, the status of the biomarkers was assessed in the tissue of the prostate cancer. The statistical analysis of magnitude is particularly important. As I mentioned, there were two cohorts. One was defined as biomarkers negative and one was defined as biomarker positive. There was a futility analysis for the biomarkers negative cohort that was planned after enrolling about 200 patients of the 600 patients planned for this arm and 125 composite progression events, which was presented at ASCO GU. In the biomarkers positive cohort, primary endpoints was to assess radiographic progression-free survival in the BRCA1, BRCA2 subgroup first. And if this was positive, the study was powered also to assess the radiographic progression-free survival in the whole biomarkers positive cohort. A total of 400 patients were planned to be enrolled in the biomarkers positive cohort, and 50% of these patients were to be BRCA1, BRCA2 positive. As we have seen, this was a stratification criteria for the biomarkers positive cohort. The futility analysis in the biomarkers negative cohort of magnitude did not demonstrate any benefit of the addition of niraparib to abiraterone and prednisone compared to placebo. As you can see here, the curves overlap completely and the hazard ratio was 1.09. In the biomarkers positive cohort, those are the patient's baseline characteristics of the two arms. As expected, most of the patients had the BRCA2 alteration, which is known to be the most common DNA repair alteration in patients with prostate cancer, followed by ATM BRCA1, and then a long tail of rare kind of DNA repair gene alteration. Overall, the characteristics were well balanced, but there were some that were slightly different. For example, ego performance status. One patients were more represented in the niraparib arm compared to the placebo arm, and also the visceral metastasis patients, 24.1% versus 18.5% in the niraparib versus placebo arm. So overall, a little bit worse prognosis as patients' baseline characteristics in the niraparib arm compared to the placebo arm. So the first analysis was done in the BRCA1, BRCA2 mutated cancer. And as you can see here, the RPFS assessed by central review, but also by investigator, was positive, statistically significant with a hazard ratio 0.53. So niraparib plus abiraterone and prednisone was able to significantly prolong the radiographic progression-free survival of those patients with BRCA1, BRCA2. The median radiographic progression-free survival with niraparib was 16.6 months versus 10.9 months in the placebo arm as assessed by central review. When they look at the all biomarkers positive cohort, the radiographic progression-free survival assessed by central review was also positive with an hazard ratio 0.73. Also, the RPFS assessed by investigator continued to be positive in the whole biomarkers positive cohort. The pre-planned subgroup analysis showed a benefit with niraparib in terms of radiographic progression-free survival in all the subgroups of patients analyzed. Many secondary endpoints were also reported at ASCO GU with the niraparib plus abiraterone and prednisone. So you can see here in the biomarkers positive cohort and also in the BRCA1 or BRCA2 mutated cohort, there was a significant a longer time to cytotoxic chemotherapy. Same thing was observed with niraparib in terms of time to symptomatic progression. It was seen in the biomarkers positive as well as in the BRCA1 and BRCA2 mutated group. The study was not mature enough to show a meaningful difference or a prolongation of overall survival, but there was a pre-specified overall survival multivariate analysis that showed a positive trend towards benefit with an hazard ratio 0.76 in terms of OS. We have to keep in mind that only 20% of the planned death events were registered at the time of this analysis. Other secondary endpoints were also showing a benefit in terms of for niraparib plus abiraterone and prednisone, in particular prolongation of PSA progression in the biomarkers positive and BRCA1, 2 mutated group. This is a very important result. In all of the biomarkers positive patients and also in specifically in patients with BRCA1, BRCA2 mutated tumor, there was an increase of the overall response to the treatment and was doubled in the biomarkers positive patients and was significantly higher in the BRCA1 and BRCA2 mutated patients. The quality of life during the treatment with niraparib and abiraterone versus placebo plus abiraterone was maintained. So there was not decrease of the quality of life during the treatment. And in terms of treatment-related side effects in the biomarkers-positive cohort, most of the patients did experience treatment-related side effects. Overall, the type of side effects were consistent with what observed with both drugs, with niraparib and abiraterone, mainly consisting for niraparib in bone marrow toxicity with anemia and thrombocytopenia being more frequent. Again, bone marrow toxicity mainly related to niraparib was the most frequent observed, but also nausea was observed more frequently in the niraparib arm compared to placebo and abiraterone. So the summary from this study is that niraparib in addition to abiraterone and prednisone in patients with biomarkers negative metastatic CRPC did not improve radiographic progression-free survival, while the addition of niraparib to abiraterone and prednisone in the biomarkers positive cohort of patients with metastatic CRPC improved the radiographic progression-free survival in the BRCA 1 and 2 patients, as well as in the whole cohort of patients with homologous recombination deficiency, and also improved time to cytotoxic chemotherapy, symptomatic progression, and PSA progression. There was a higher overall response rate with niraparib plus abiraterone versus abiraterone plus placebo. The quality of life of patients was maintained during the treatment. So Magnitude highlights the importance of testing for homologous recombination deficiency in patients with metastatic CRPC. It shows that this combination of niraparib and abiraterone is a very promising strategy for first-line treatment in patients with metastatic CRPC harboring homologous recombination alteration. My perspective on Magnitude is that this is an extremely important study, and it's important because it confirms the importance of the patient selection. It's a biomarker-driven clinical trial that led to positive results in terms of prolongation of radiographic progression-free survival in patients with biomarkers-positive metastatic CRPC. I do think that these results, although extremely promising, are not really changing clinical practice immediately. We do need to wait for overall survival data. Moreover, there are additional questions raised by this study. We do know that PARP inhibitors work after progression on androgen receptor pathway inhibitor in metastatic CRPC, as demonstrated by the profound clinical trial as monotherapy. So it will be very unlikely to have a head-to-head comparison between combination versus monotherapy. So one question should be, will the combination upfront be better than sequential treatment with PARP inhibitors and ARPI in a biomarkers positive population? Moreover, this study also showed that they are not high concern in terms of safety. It seems that the combination of PARP inhibitors with androgen receptor target agents is safe, and quality of life of patients was maintained during the study. A challenge that we'll face is how we will access to biomarkers testing in our patients with metastatic CRPC. While many provinces in Canada and many places in the world there is access to germline alteration testing, the test for somatic alteration is quite challenging at the present time. There is not really access everywhere to circulating tumor DNA, and the testing in the tumor tissue is it's uncertain if whether or not it's predictive of the presence in all the patients with the metastatic CRPC of this kind of alteration. We also know that the selection of patients only on the basis of genomic alteration is somehow suboptimal, especially from data in other cancer, for example, breast and ovarian cancer. So we do have to work more on optimizing a better functional biomarkers. And this is my last slide. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Dr. Nappi. I think that was an excellent overview. I think that, certainly you hit the nail on the head about the promise that we see here and the potential of how it could impact care. I guess the big elephant in the room is, how do you view PROPEL in the context of magnitude, which was also presented at GU ASCO by Dr. Fred Saad, of another PARP inhibitor plus abiraterone versus abiraterone plus placebo?
Yeah, so that's a very good question. And I think we will spend a lot of time trying to understand the differences in terms of patients' population and study design that could explain the different outcomes of these two studies. What I personally think is that magnitude was a very elegant study that selected patients based on biomarkers prospectively. Therefore, the risk of biases and confounding variables was much lower than in PROPEL, where all the patients were randomized without selecting patients with biomarkers, and then a retrospective analysis for biomarkers was conducted. So I think that in that kind of study, obviously several variables could have played a role towards the positivity in the unselected patients population. The other issues, and I think limitation of PROPEL, is that the retrospective analysis in terms of homologous recombination deficiency was done only using circulating tumor DNA, while in magnitude, all the patients that were screened with plasma, but if they were negative, the tumor was tested, and these things was not done in PROPEL. So there is obviously a limitation, because we do know that ctDNA is not perfect, doesn't capture 100% of patients with this kind of alteration. So that could also partially explain these kind of divergent results.
Thanks very much, Dr. Nappi. I think that's a very elegant answer of why it's necessary that we appropriately test these patients and consider when we need to offer not only liquid biopsy, but also tumor tissue biopsy sequencing. From your perspective, especially in the Canadian landscape, how do you think that this might potentially impact how we refer patients, who should be seeing these patients, and now we should be offering this testing across the nation?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So I know that in several provinces now, genetic testing, so for germline alteration, is available for all patients with metastatic prostate cancer. So I would suggest that every patient with metastatic prostate cancer, right at the beginning, so when they still have metastatic castrate-sensitive prostate cancer, are referred for this kind of testing, so that we at least have germline mutation data about our patients. For the somatic alteration, the answer is it's more complex, because obviously if you test too early with circulating tumor DNA, you risk to underestimate your patients, simply because a lot of patients right at the beginning with a very low tumor burden do not have enough circulating tumor DNA, so they could be falsely negative just because the ctDNA is not enough, it's not accessible. So we have to do it in the metastatic CRPC setting. The issue is that not all the centers across Canada have access to circulating tumor DNA for somatic alteration detection. And even if it is available, again, we know there are 20 to 30% of patients who have not detectable circulating tumor DNA. So in that case, tissue needs to be requested retrial for somatic alteration. So I think that we need to have a biomarker assessment plan for somatics, especially for somatic alteration that are more challenging than germline alteration, that's based on circulating tumor DNA, with the plan of going back to tissue if the circulating tumor DNA is not detectable.
And I agree. And I think just from my own clinical practice today, it underlines the need for us to start thinking about why we need to offer early upfront biopsies of these patients, especially those who have de novo metastatic disease. And previously, I think we previously would consider empirically treating patients based upon an elevated PSA and pretty convincing imaging. But nowadays, the potential impact, not only from a research perspective, but especially from future treatment options, we need to collect tissue. I think tissue is always still going to be the issue, but it's good to know that we'll also have the option of liquid biopsy guiding the way. Well, with that, I'd like to thank Dr. Nappi again for her insights around the PROPEL as well as Magnitude trial. We'll be also discussing the Magnitude trial in further detail later on in these video capsules. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Dr. Heath.
Thank you.